Sorry to get everybody up so early today, but you know, there are other events, and we wanted to get in before a possible clash. Thank you all for coming. All right, I'll keep it very brief because we're short of time. The title, as you see, gets us to focus on the two aspects of the Turkish economy that we've all been looking at in different ways. You know, the extent to which is the global convulsions that are affecting the Turkish economy, and you know, the ongoing political uncertainties. Recently, somebody dropped by and said, you know, only 10% of the Turkish economic crisis was due to the domestic crisis, but that was going to go up. So, as the domestic crisis developed, so. What I'm going to do is ask Güvensak first to make a presentation, and then Baran Tuncer will provide some comments, and then we'll proceed to questions and answers. You know, to introduce very quickly our two speakers, Dr. Sak is Vice President and Professor of Economics in the Taub Economics and Technology University, which was recently established and doing very well. He's also director of the Economic Policy Research Foundation of Turkey. We use the Turkish acronym. That's how it's very well known, TEPAV. I visited it in Ankara many times. And I know Mort spoke about think tanks in the past. And, you know, Mort, I got to tell you, TEPAV is really, really doing well in Turkey, which is good to see. Then Dr. Baran Tuncer will comment, as I said. He's had a very distinguished career at the World Bank and is currently a columnist at Radical, and I read him regularly and avidly. Further ado, Dr. Güvensak. Welcome to CSIS.
Okay. Good morning. And let me be very quick also in depicting a general picture. I have a very, very proper presentation, but it's best not to go over all the details of the presentation. What I'd like to underline basically is, how can I use this one? Is this, and some of you have heard the general framework some time ago in Ankara too. I have some additional slides here because of the ongoing situation in Ankara. There are rapid developments, let's say, but we shouldn't forget the focus, and we shouldn't forget the general picture. Economic and social transformation process has started in Turkey in the 1980s, and it is still continuing, and it is going to continue. There is no question about it. There are ups and downs all throughout the process, but if you have that long view, I don't think that the developments in Turkey at the moment are in any way going to hamper the transformation process that has already started. And some of the problems that we are now encountering are because of the fact that we just couldn't manage the transformation process very delicately, let me say. So it's because of the management process of the transformation that we are now dealing with some of the problems. The situation is like, as Charles Dickens has mentioned in the opening sentences of A Tale of Two Cities, it's an age of rapid change. It's the worst of times, and it's the best of times also. And Turkish economy, Turkish society is changing very rapidly. And the dynamics that has changed Turkey up until now are well and alive, and they have the capacity to continue the transformation process. Anyway, the important issue here is to manage the mishaps that may arise on the way in the near future. That's how I see the situation when I look at Turkey. I'm just going to go over very quickly about where we were just 6 months ago, because our agenda was different. Just 6 months ago, we had a different agenda. We were basically discussing about a longer-term agenda in Turkey. Let me pass these. We had high growth. And when you compare with other countries, we had a very, very good performance with the BRICS, with the Asian Four, etc. It's a very good performance. But in 2007, the growth prospects of the Turkish economy, the growth prospects that what the others are waiting from Turkey, as the growth performance has declined. Comparatively, it declined.
What's BRSE?
is BRIC: Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Okay.
These are the rising stars in the emerging market world. There is social transformation, too. There is a rapidly growing middle class now. That has started to emerge, I mean, with the emergence of industry in Anatolia with Özal reforms. And it is now growing, as you see with the numbers, in automobile sales, number of airline passengers from 34 million to 59 million, mobile phone network users, number of people getting housing loans in Turkey. And they are not like the housing loans in the U.S. No, don't worry about that. No danger there. But our problem is still the same. Since from 1970s till today, the per capita income, when compared with the U.S. or when compared with EU, has not changed a lot. It's about 20% of the U.S. per capita income in Turkey. So the problem is the convergence of the Turkish economy, and that's what the transformation has to have in mind, because there are others who have managed to converge in the meantime, you know, since 1970. So it's not about, it's not about different political parties, etc. That was the issue. That is the issue in Turkey, and that was the issue also in Turkey. So the important issue, that's why I believe that the management of the transformation process is important. The transformation process that has gained some momentum after 2001 crisis seems to be stalling down a little bit because of capacity constraints in the economy, because, you know, we don't have enough trained personnel, we don't have enough roads, etc. So there is the need to return to the basics a little bit more. That's what I understand basically from second generation reforms. There is the need for more public investments into the infrastructure of the country. And so the current capacity of industry and services is not enough to employ the people. That's why we have the problem with unemployment. The important issue is to change or manage this process of change more properly. And that's what we understand at TEPA from second generation reforms. The issue is not restore the growth process in Turkey. We did it with the 2001 reforms in Turkey, 2002. Since then, we have been following that policy prescription. The important issue is to sustain the growth process that has already started. And for that, there is the need to realign the institutional infrastructure of the Turkish economy. That requires reforms in education, health, social security, and also judicial services, in everything. And that's all these issues are very contentious issues. So this reform process, this second generation reform process, which is important for the transformation, for continuing the transformation process of Turkey, requires consensus building, requires collective action in the near future. And that's where we made the mistake since 2007. Devam ediyor muyum? Geriye gidiyor. It's going backwards. Okay. Found out. No?
Mustafa.
And now we have, in fact, three important issues, I can say three crises juxtaposed at the moment, two domestic and one external. External one is the favorable international liquidity conditions that helped us in the first phase of this reform process after 2001 or 2002. There is also the decline in the rate of growth of the Turkish economy because we couldn't start this second generation reform agenda. And because of the fact that this deep polarization in Turkey is not good for a reform process that requires consensus building in Turkey. So we have one domestic and one external issue. Now we have the third one, another domestic issue, a political crisis. And the problem with the court case, the problem with the political crisis is that it has led to economic policy uncertainty. in the Turkish economy. And the fact is, policy uncertainty is not good for the growth process. It is not good for consumer sentiments in Turkey, because the Turkish economy is now changing its shape. The consumer sentiments are more important than it was in the past. So we are in a situation, we are in a delicate situation, let me say. This requires more careful management from now on. Devam edebilir miyiz? Okay, let me continue.
We'll get that.
So the when we look at this agenda, so there are two domestic and one international problems that the Turkish economy is now facing with. We can't do anything for the international banking crisis. It's going to continue to unfold, and it's going to influence the Turkish economy. It has not influenced us badly yet, because it is going to influence us with the when our companies external debts are going to be refinanced, let's say around in the middle of this year, in June to July, in that period, we'll see the major impact, because there is a problem in the Turkish corporate sector. When you look at our companies, they do not grow when compared with the ones in the comparator countries, because there are problems in access to finance. But now the problem is that the ones who have already had access to finance, who already access to international markets, are going to face a problem in the near future. So we are going to see the impact of the international crisis in the months to come on the Turkish economy, and it will be basically seen by this by the impact on the balance sheets of the corporate sector, basically. Domestic issues, when compared to the international issue, is more easily manageable. But the problem that we have now regarding the economic policy framework, there is now kind of a paralysis at the governmental level in dealing with those issues, and that's not good for the growth prospects of the Turkish economy. And the problem is not that there are no preparations for a new agenda. There are preparations, but the problem is about prioritizing the policy agenda and about designing a communication strategy with the public in general. So it's not good for the growth process, and it's not good for the consumer sentiments in the case of Turkey. That's why an external anchor could be good. That's why strengthening the EU anchor at this moment could be useful, as there is nobody in Ankara to manage this process properly. And regarding, we can pass this one. It's about the possible impact of the global credit crisis on the Turkish economy. That's what I'm waiting for. I think we had the dress rehearsal for this, the impact of this kind of a crisis in around May 2006 in Turkey. There was a turmoil also at that time. And the impact is, it's less on the FX rate, but more on the interest rate adjustment. So we just have to wait more interest rate adjustments in the Turkish economy, interest rates to stay high. And it is now, we are not, thanks God that Iceland has raised the interest rates. We are not giving the highest rates now. Iceland is now giving the highest rates, but it is going to stay there. So the impact in this case is not going to be like the one in 2001 crisis. It's going to be a long-term impact. The growth capacity of the Turkish economy is going to be impaired by this process, and that means there will be more, we have got to live with the unemployment problem for some time. And the political uncertainty is just adding up on this. It has to be considered as an additional item to stall the growth process in the case of the Turkey. So policy uncertainty is, we have to look more for the possible evolution of this policy uncertainty issue That's why I have the one after this. Let me see the other slide. We have to consider how the court case could evolve in the case of Turkey, because it seems that it is going to influence what is going to happen in the near future in the case of the Turkish economy. So there are two phases. The first phase is for the court decision-making process, let me say. The first phase is going to end with the decision of the court, and then a new phase is going to start. And the policy uncertainty has already started at the beginning of the first phase. It has already started. There can be two actions that AKP could take, and it is going to influence the future, especially the second phase, the structure of the second phase, basically. There can be a moderate reaction, which is the preparation of the defense for the court. There can be a broader package for a liberal constitutional amendments in Turkey, and the need is that there is the need to seek new alliances in the case of Turkey. Or there can be a more hardliner reaction. Yeah, it was good when it hardliner reaction. And in that case, there is a mini constitutional amendment package only for party closures. There can be a referendum, and there can be early elections. So this is kind of a political reaction to a political court case, as one within the AKP has been talking about for some time. And at the end of the first phase, whether there is going to be a moderate reaction or a hardline reaction, there can be two options. It can either stay open or closed. That's not going to change, basically. The probabilities may change. And if there is a moderate reaction and the party is closed at the end of the day, I believe that there will be a new old party that can continue to function. But if there is a more hardliner reaction and a closure case, then there is going to be a split that's going to be inevitable at the end of the day. If we assume that AKP is also a coalition of different parts, there is a more radical hardcore and also a liberal sphere around that core. So if there is going to be a hardliner reaction, then a split is going to be inevitable. And if the party is going to stay open in both cases, there we can't assume that AKP is going to be like the old AKP. This is going to have an impact. There is definitely going to be a reaction against what has happened. So I'm not sure whether we can easily go back to the old agenda of reform process, where consensus building is the core of the issue. So I believe that either we can have some continuing old tensions, or we may have some new tensions that may arise, which are not good in the near term for the transformation process, for the reform agenda in general. So let me conclude as far as I remember. These are the priorities for today. Let me go over them very quickly. I believe that now the focus should be on sustaining funding flows into the Turkey. So especially FDI is also important there. Uncertainty regarding the regulatory framework has to be solved as quickly as possible. Refinancing needs of the corporate sector are of primary importance. The adherence to fiscal discipline is key in the near future. So the package that has been disclosed last week, I think at the end of last week, was not a good idea. It was, let me say this in this way, it was badly designed. You know, in January 2007, Brazil did the same with this PAC for the program for the sustaining growth, which is a very, all the elements of Brazil's PAC is in fact available now in Turkey in different government circles. But the important issue, nobody has just put them together and announced it as a program, which last week's announcement could easily become a part of in that framework, but that wasn't designed. And the last point is that credibility of the central bank is important, and it is a high possibility that it's going to be impaired too, because IT framework did not work up until now. There is the need, as Brazil did, I think, some years ago, to change the target now, but we have got to do it in a credible way. So let me conclude very quickly. What is important is Turkey is to complete the economic and social transformation process that has already started. It is not only domestically important, it is also important for the regional role of Turkey. It is important for integrating the region around Turkey into the global economy, because only Turkey could contribute to the private sector development in the regional countries, in the countries of our region. But this requires, this transformation process needs to be managed more properly. So up until now, bad political decisions has only become additional binding constraints for today. So we have to consider this in discussing the new phases of the transformation process. And we shouldn't forget that, lastly, the nature of this reform process, this transformation process, requires broad-based consensus. So polarization is not good for the transformation. That's why, for example, we are working nowadays whether there can be a role for the Grand National Assembly in this process, because the civil politics should have given primary importance in the new future of Turkey. All the politicians should understand that they have a role in this transformation process and in the future of the country. That's why, in fact, together with TÜSİAD, we are now discussing whether a constitutional convention could be established under the auspices of the Grand National Assembly so that a new era of kind of consensus building could start. We are at the very rudimentary stage still. So let me stop here.
Can you go back one, please, before I give the floor to Bayram? I just want to ask you one, if you can. One specific question. Now, at the very beginning, you said that the liquidity that was available in the international financial world was very important for Turkey, the transformation and growth. You talked about how, where did you say, you actually said, oh, maybe it's not this one. You talked about ensuring fund
inflows.
Focus should be on sustaining fund inflows. Now, there is, you know, so many of the investors are now having problems. You know, they're writing off huge amounts. And I'm seeing some figures that there has been some withdrawal of foreign funds, so-called hot money from Turkey. Mm-hmm. Okay, how do you actually suggest that you can sustain the fund inflows when the global situation is not what it was before and the domestic uncertainty is there, you know, in terms of ensuring it?
First of all, policy uncertainty issue has got to be solved. I mean, this long-term dynamics, the major dynamics of the change in the Turkish economy has to be underlined. That's why I told at the outset that there is the need to take a longer view when you are looking at the developments in Turkey. Secondly, the important issue is to show the regional role or importance of Turkey, because there is the need now to restructure the basic infrastructure of the country in the years to come. Transformation, energy, telecommunication. There is the need for big projects in Turkey. What we have got to do, we have got to solve the regulatory issues in those areas as quickly as possible. And I believe that it's possible to sustain the fund inflows by preparing that regulatory framework in the Grand National Assembly as quickly as possible.
Okay. Thanks for the explanation. Thank you. Could you put possibly the light on?
Sure.
Okay. Sorry to keep you. Barambe.
Yes. Well, it was nice once again to be in your good offices.
Welcome
and
back.
To meet, to see some of our old friends, my old friends. And thank you also, including me in this meeting. I don't want to say much about this transformation process. It's worthy of debate, worthy of discussion, but if we get into it now, I don't think we can easily come out of it. Rather, what I would like to do in this limited time that I would allow myself is to look at what Güven Bey was talking about, not exactly from a different perspective, but again, a broader perspective as far as I'm concerned. Now, what helped the Turkish growth process and relative success of the Turkish economy in the last 4 or 5 years were its dependence on 4 anchors and 1 development. And those anchors were, 1, IMF anchor, 2, European Union anchor, 3, political stability anchor, and 4, it was the improvements in the macroeconomic fundamentals anchor, without which I don't think Turkey could have attained what it has in the last 4 or 5 years. But one also has to add to it is the friendly external environment that contributed to this process, which is very important. I won't call it an anchor, but it was a process that was very important, relevant in Turkey's economic growth. When we look at this present situation from this point of view, I can't help but be concerned. First of all, there is uncertainty regarding to what the government will decide eventually and agree with IMF. I mean, there are all sorts of talks about we don't need IMF or we need IMF, we need this kind of arrangement, that kind of arrangement. But I think in the relatively hostile world economic environment, Turkey continues to need some form of IMF anchor. If Turkey, I mean, if an arrangement could be made, Turkey doesn't have to draw on a standby. It could be a precautionary type of arrangement. And if a serious problem occurs in the next several months, Turkey would have immediate money to draw on. It would also give the impression to the rest of the world that the economy basically can rely on still some important sources, one of which is the IMF sources. So it's mostly in the hands of the Turkish government to get into a kind of arrangement with IMF that is the most helpful under the present circumstances. With the EU anchor, it's not all in the hands of Turkey. In other words, I agree with Güven that there has been dropping the ball on the part of the Turkish government as far as the focus they had on EU. However, given the negative positions taken by some EU members and also the relatively problematic pronouncements on the part of the EU bureaucracy, it's very difficult for Turkey to say to go back on a smooth path with EU. So the prospects for the EU anchor is not as strong as, say, they were 3 years ago when Turkey first was given this opportunity to start the negotiations. Macroeconomic fundamentals, it was important. By that I mean, of course, putting the house in order, especially in the area of fiscal policy, monetary policy, et cetera, et cetera. But now we observe some weakening in the fiscal policies. I think you alluded to that. It's May 2008 doesn't look as good as, say, what happened in 2006. I'm not talking about 2007 because there were reasons, there were excuses given for not really following up the strong macroeconomic performance. But the recent figures indicate that we may encounter some problems there. Not the same strong, stable picture. However, the fourth anchor I mentioned, the political stability, is the one that comes to question, and I think you brought that into pick, the main, and made him include that in his various statements. I won't go into it, but it is not just a court case in Turkey now, as he calls it, the court case. There is also more political fragmentation in Turkey right now than one would see a year ago or 2 years ago. ultra-nationalists, liberals, and the Kurdish nationalists, and you can add several factions, and at times these different factions are very hostile to each other. Like the so-called laic section, and then so-called conservative or religious elements in the society, etc. I mean, these are all very well known. I don't want to go into it. But what I am trying to point out is that the emerging picture is less political stability now than, say, again, that was a couple of years ago. This is ironic because, after all, the government, the present government, present power, as everybody knows, had the support of the 47% of the electorate. However, the present government unfortunately used this support in such a way that deepened the fractions in the country, almost to the point of causing a political crisis. Probably it was the misfortune of this government to have 47% of the support. Maybe if they had come to power with 35% support, they might have been a little more careful. But once they got 47%, and when the various polls indicated that they may even surpass that if there was an election next year type of thing, the government, especially the leader of the power, the government, became not only cocky but became arrogant in many ways. Now, with this sort of shaky anchors, coupled with what happens to the international financial system and all that, raises a number of serious questions regarding what may happen in Turkey in the next several months, if not years. Now, I don't know whether I should go into any of those. Maybe I should stop here.
Take 5 minutes, Sam. I think this is useful. The interplay between the global and the domestic, as you see it, situations would be, I think, fascinating.
Yeah. Well, UN pointed out to the potential impact on the interest rate, and he looked at the foreign exchange impact somehow less problematic. I differ on that a little bit, mainly because if Turkey is unable to attract the kind of capital in the next several months, it is bound to have an impact on the exchange rate, regardless of the interest rate, unless you use the interest rate in such a phenomenal way. I mean, around these interest rates and all that, it's very difficult. Now, for one thing, I did not point out to it, and neither did UN, the inflationary forces are making the policy making and policy administration even more difficult. Inflationary forces. Some of them originate from within Turkey, some from outside, obviously. But my personal prediction, and I could not, of course, verify this with any calculations, 15% of price increase in end of 2008 is not out of the question. It's already about 11%, I think. And the central bank president said that 4% target is out, now 9.3% is it, but already, which one, 4%? Yes, but the present is talking about 10%, and it's going to be beyond that. And the economic growth rate now, they talk about 4% or less. And again, my personal gut feeling is that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we saw at the end of the year 3.5% growth at best for Turkey. But going back to the exchange rate issue, if the domestic situation does not improve significantly, and if the external situation doesn't improve in a measurable way, Turkey will have difficulty in attracting as much capital as it did in the previous years. And UN has rightly pointed out that this could make life for some Turkish firms very difficult, because right now, no less than 60% of the Turkish external debt is by the private sector. And we're talking about, like, external debt by the private sector is, what, about $150 billion. And some $40 billion, or 36, 38, whatever, billion dollars is short term. Now, when the time comes to refinance these debts, as he mentioned, this private sector may find it very difficult to, first of all, find the money. And they won't be able to find the money at the same rates as they did last year. And what's worse, it could be even more problematic in terms of the volumes involved, and that would affect also the interest rate immensely. Now, on the capital flows to Turkey, the private sector, so-called direct investment, is bound to be less, partly because in Turkish accounts, a significant part of the Turkish direct investment to Turkey is the privatization or the sale of some Turkish assets to abroad, and I don't think it's going to be as abundant in 2008 or 2009. So I would expect some decline in that. What also worries me personally is that the government payments, papers purchased by the foreigners, which constitute, in a way, the hot money, as they call it, the foreigners may find it less desirable to continue with that sort of purchases in Turkey. And there are indications of it. And the coming July and August months are when there are large amounts of redemptions in that. And they may not really, they may be waiting. This is not my only personal observation, but others also look at it. Some people also see it this way. They may not prefer being in Turkey at current interest rates, given the inflation, etc. Moreover, the Turkish financial system rightfully wants to be more liquid than before. Now, there was a statement by one of the key high-ranking officers of one of the major banks that they're not too much worried about the liquidity because they have lots of government papers in their hands, and then come July, August, they may convert it into liquidity. Now, that's very dangerous if they do that. The government may be forced to borrow at much higher interest rates than they do now. So I don't mean to draw a very bleak picture. However, what I see now. Okay, let me.
Say something really bad.
Okay. Now, if you allow me, I'll just give you a little anecdote that goes back many years. When I was a very young person, as an economist, I used to work for the Turkish State Planning Organization. At that time, İnönü was the prime minister, and his so-called high planning council meetings, we would have to sit next to him and speak loud on his correct ear. One ear wasn't as good as the other. And before the meeting, we had a preparation at the planning organization, and I was going to make the presentation, and I was told that I should be careful not to be too hard, because after all, we have a very old man here. he may be affected by all this and all that. So I went through a story, and then at the end I said, even though I said it may look this bad, but there are some factors that could make it less problematic. And he stopped me. He says, I know what you're doing, he said. He would always talk slowly. I know what you're doing. You don't want me to feel very badly. After what you said, I don't care what else you say. I got the picture. So anyway, I'll stop at that.
Well, Inan is not here, but the rest of us got the picture. Okay. Now, neither of you focused on the current accounts deficit and the way it's being financed by quote-unquote hot money, but I'm going to skip my question on this in case anybody else wants to do it because of time constraints. Nobody else does. I'll pick it up. Go ahead, Ambassador Bermes. Mort, can you...
you have painted a very some gloomy prospects, obviously. And in the chart you had on the possible political outcomes, the problem is nobody can predict these outcomes. There's simply a great uncertainty hanging over the economy, whether it'll be solved or whether there will be a greater resolution in a few months or 5-6 months, all that has to unfold. So the question is, what is, do the managers of Turkey do about this today? What steps do they take to deal with what seems a serious train wreck coming down the pike? I don't understand what they are. I don't perceive...
What
they should be doing. You're painting a very gloomy picture, which can't be resolved right now, at least the political side. So given that great uncertainty, what should the government be doing, or should it just watch and observe a potential serious train wreck for the Turkish economy?
No, of course they should be doing something. Not only the government, but the important issue now is for all the political parties to show some kind of understanding that they are following the transformation process in the Turkish economy, and they are underlining that. For example, you know, we need symbolic things at the moment. For example, when Barroso came to Ankara, they all listened to him. They didn't leave the meeting room, which is good. I mean, even that was good. Even that was good. So there is the need to show that there is an understanding in Ankara about the issues, about the transformation process in general. But what needs to be done are these issues there. One is fiscal discipline. You know, Yelken neydi? I was reading a manual for learning about the sales, you know. It was saying that when a storm is coming, it says, and you don't know how to manage the sales, then stay where you are. Don't do anything. So we are now, for the government, at a stage where they shouldn't be doing anything. They should adhere to fiscal discipline. They should be showing everybody that they are not trying to, you know, to manage the process. Because the measures that they are now taking in the Turkish economy are the measures for sustaining the high growth process. That's 6 months ago. It is not the situation now. The situation now is they have got to show that fiscal discipline is there, central bank credibility, central bank is important. They are doing their job. It's necessary to show that they are in control. So at this stage, if you ask me, they shouldn't be doing anything. What they should do is to sign something with the IMF as quickly as possible, and they should increase the importance of EU in the minds of the Turkish public. And it is something like this. I was talking to people in Brussels about that. EU has become very much a political agenda item in Turkey for us. Now the EU, Brussels has got to start changing that too, because EU for us is an economic project also. EU itself was an economic project. It was designed years ago as an economic project. Now they have to rediscover that nature of the EU project once more, the ones in Brussels, and also we have to rediscover it. They have to show, they have to place Turkey, because Turkey is not like a normal accession country. We are also part of the customs union. And that makes us part of the EU economic area. So there should be more references to Turkey in the EU documents, EU economic policy documents. You know, they have to underline, if they are discussing the automotive industry in the EU, they have to add something there regarding Turkey. Some kind of, you know, in their, just to give the impact that in their future plans, there is a role for Turkey. Now they are not doing anything like that, and this gives the impression that, you know, in the future of the EU, in the Lisbon agenda, etc., Turkey does not have any role. So, in that way, the government has to help us to rediscover the EU in this way. also. So these are the basic issues that I have in my mind.
Would you like to add something?
Well, I agree with everything you say, Güven. I would add to it that the government can do a lot to reduce the political tension in the country. And they really should do it, without which I don't think the Turkish economy can really go very far or recover from the dilemma that it's facing now. And, of course, not only the government, but the other responsible parties, the political parties, other groups and all that, will have to contribute to, once again, establishing some sense of normalcy in the political system.
It would seem that the most important thing is for the courts to make a decision now to reduce the political uncertainty, not to extend this for 7 or 8 or 9 months, but to make the decision whether they prescribe the party, but they should otherwise. They're all living on borrowed time. Is that wrong?
Well, I can't. How can I say it's wrong? No, you obviously have a very strong point. However, regardless of when the court decides, currently the present government can, I think, make statements, take measures, withdraw some earlier attempts like changing the constitution and all sorts of things that irritate a large number of people, and giving up its this fixation with this so-called headscarf issue and all that, they have to really reduce the tension to government by a number of actions, and without which I don't think we can go very far. So this is all that I would like to add. What you said, they should take macroeconomic stability fundamentals more seriously. They should really decide quickly about IMF and decide in the direction that I thought would be appropriate. And EU, you just elaborated on it. I won't go into it. But right now, as I guess you also indicated, that the Turkish economy does not seem to have a direction. No direction. It coasted on the IMF program for many years, and now the time has come the Turkish governments to have short, medium, and long-term strategy, and it is missing badly. If the people would know how the government sees the existing situation, what measures they want to take, it just doesn't help for the government ministers to go around and say that everything is all right. It just won't fly. Yeah, it doesn't fly here either.
Okay, but nonetheless, I need to note that I do agree with Ambassador Abramovich that when the train wreck comes, it's going to be a profound shock to the system, and whether whatever they do now will alleviate that, we'll just have to see. Next question, please. Go ahead at the end, and then Mitiangi, sir. Can you turn on the mic, please? Yeah, so we can hear.
I think you were going to ask a question about the current account, and if you don't mind, I'll raise that subject. Well, one of the gentlemen mentioned something about the capacity constraints, and I think therein is part of the problem that the domestic demand has been relatively high in recent years. And so you've had this current account deficit come about. Now, maybe some of this depreciation will help in that regard, but on the other hand, I get the impression that there's a structural component to this in the sense that as Turkey's export products are changing to higher value added, there's a higher import component of the export products. So I wonder what kind of developments you see in store for the current account, barring a massive devaluation. How can they resolve this reasonably?
Okay. I mean, the reason for high current account deficits in Turkey is basically a structural issue. When Turkey grows rapidly, we are producing these high current account deficits because it looks to be a long-term issue, if you ask me, because as the domestic savings are lower, and if you are in a convergence path, let me say, there is the need for more foreign savings to flow into the country in order to sustain the process. So I don't see any easy solution for the issue. Finding a solution to the high current account deficits in over one night, etc. It's not a possibility, and the appreciation of the Turkish lira is also is contributing to the fact that there is growth in the intermediate import requirements of our industry. That's another factor, but I think the appreciation of the domestic currency and also this globalization of the production process, let me say, we can also look at it from that angle, are the things that are going to stay here with us for some time too. Global liquidity conditions, if international liquidity is going to continue flowing between countries like this, and if the companies are having more global plans for their production, as the Turkish companies become part of those global chains too, global value chains too, it is going to stay with us in the future. And I believe that those current account deficits also still have and are going to have more related with these international value chains that are gaining importance in the production process of the Turkey. So I don't think there is an easy solution for that. The issue is going to stay with us in the medium term. That's how I see it. It's a process that we need to manage.
Do you want to take a couple of minutes on the current deficit?
I expect the current account deficit will come down in the coming years. It can't go on like this. I mean, how far can Turkey go with this relatively high interest rate and appreciated Turkish lira? It's killing Turkey. It really is killing Turkey, not only in terms of the deficit in the current account, but also in terms of what it does to Turkish industrialization process and the structure of the economy. Turkey has become an economy that relies on imports heavily, even though exports more compared to the previous years, but it's because, as indicated, dependent on the cheap imported material, etc. But what is worse, that in Turkey now the trade has become the main profitable activity. Industrial production is not profitable at all unless you are able to import more and more from abroad in terms of cheap inputs. This can't really go on. This is killing Turkey. For this, what can you do is the very difficult question. First of all, there is a very strong coalition, as it would be in any other country in Turkey, for the appreciation of the Turkish lira. Who benefits from it? From it, the consumer benefits a great deal. As long as you can import, imported goods are relatively cheap, so consumers wouldn't want to change in the exchange rate. The government doesn't want to have it changed because, well, it really helps reduce inflation. This also goes to the central bank's position as well. With this kind of low, or rather appreciated exchange rate, the inflation is constrained. The big business sector benefits from it. They can import cheaply and manufacture and sell. And the foreign capitalists, I shouldn't say capitalists because that may refer to something, but the foreign managers of the hot money, et cetera, they don't want it to change because it just really provides a haven for them. They just make so much money in Turkey because of this. Therefore, it is not as easy politically either to go the other way. Now, we talk about the Turkish business sector borrowed heavily from abroad, for example, and even the largest Turkish firms could get into trouble if, say, there is a 20% depreciation of the Turkish lira. It's very difficult, I mean, for those firms to. So if these firms get into trouble, the very sound financial sector in Turkey now can also get into trouble because these people borrowed not only from abroad but from the domestic banks as well. If they are unable to pay their debts back in a timely fashion, that could put an additional constraint on the banking sector as well. So it's a very complicated issue. It has to be taken up from different aspects. Political aspect has to be taken care of. Macroeconomic aspect has to be taken care of. The interest rate policy, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have a ready-made answer either.
We're coming to 10 o'clock. I'll take a meeting in service question. We can go a few minutes beyond 10 o'clock. Go ahead.
What kind of arrangements would you like to see with the IMF after Turkey graduates from the present standby tomorrow?
The problem now in Turkey, as we have policy uncertainty, is to add something that contributes to policy credibility in Turkey. That's where the IMF is important. It is important even for, you know, for the last week's, weekend's announcement of the targets. It's even important for that too. Even that stays in place, someone from outside has to tell that those numbers are achieved by the performance of the government at the end of the year. I don't like the idea to increase at this stage the expenditures. There is not enough ammunition to support that in the last weekend's announcement. I don't see it. There is the need for a more full, you know, sound program around the issue. But the important issue is first policy credibility. The numbers that the Ministry of Finance is producing is correct. Type of an announcement, kind of an auditing is required in Turkey. First, the IMF could do that very well. So we need an external auditor for the accounts. And there is the need for a medium-term framework, medium-term numbers for the future, securing fiscal discipline in Turkey. I believe these are the most important issues. And the third issue could be, if we don't know how the international crisis is going to unfold in the near future, it might be good to know that the IMF is somewhere near looking for the numbers very closely at the moment. So it is about, you know, if there is a decline in the policy, there is an increase in policy uncertainty, there is the need to take measures to increase policy credibility at this moment. We couldn't do it in Ankara. We don't have mechanisms in Ankara that are going to do it. So there is the need for an external auditor. That's how I see it.
Yeah. I think the final question would be...
Maybe their feedback about my remarks. I share all the views expressed by Professor Sak and Tuncer, but I think there are also some points, some maybe positive aspects of the Turkish economy today than, say, 2001. So we will probably not see something similar to what happened in 2001. I mean, you know, all the structural changes and everything, but also central bank reserves are at their highest, around $75 billion. And ironically, during the last 5-6 years, while foreigners invested in Turkish currency assets and government bonds, Turkish citizens kept investing in U.S. dollars, and the share of dollar-denominated deposit accounts have increased over time, and I think right now there is something around $100 billion worth of FX-denominated deposit accounts in Turkey. And I agree with Professor Tuncer that if the growth rate is going to come down, then the current account deficit will definitely come down. But again, I agree with Güven that the structural problem with our current account deficit is there, will be there, despite the fact that the nominal current account deficit will, and maybe the percentage also will come down for a while, but the financing gap or the lack of enough financial savings in the country will definitely make Turkey and Turkish economy rely heavily on external funding. So I don't know whether, I mean, of course, there is every reason to expect the government to be more cautious and take some measures, because the honeymoon is over for sure, globally and domestically. So, but I'm still more hopeful than, you know, the general image or general message that was, I think, presented this morning.
Final remarks, Güvensak, and then Berantinger.
I think Shimon Peres has mentioned that regarding the 60th anniversary of Israel just a few days ago. So the situation is better than the mood, he said, I think, when he was talking about Israel. So you were late. So when I started, I told everybody that, you know, the major dynamic that has created, that has started this transformation process in the Turkish economy, in the Turkish society, is still alive and kicking very well. So there is no problem regarding that. And Turkey is not like the country that it was in 2001. There is no question about that. But the mood in Turkey at the moment, the sentiment in Turkey at the moment, is not very good. We have to underline that issue. And, you know, I'd like to point out two issues. One is regarding with these current account deficits. We shouldn't forget that, you know, industry and the services sectors are the sectors that are creating jobs in Turkey. So they have the capacity. The industry in Turkey has the capacity to do it, as we have seen in the last couple of years. And it is because of the change in the structure of industry that we are seeing this increase in current account deficits. Turkey is losing out in some sectors, in some labor-intensive sectors, because of the fact that it is not possible for Turkey now to compete with China and the others in terms of the labor costs. So we have got to change the structure of our industry, and it is changing. It may be better to manage this change process, but it is still the issue in the picture, if you ask me. And regarding the political dimension, I believe, as Baran Bey has said, I believe that there is room for government activity. There is room for maneuver, let's say, for the government, because of the fact that, you know, in the Grand National Assembly now, MHP does not have any room for maneuver after what happened with this constitutional amendment regarding the headscarves. They made a deal with AKP, and just AKP has forgotten the deal right after the deal. So they just didn't have any room for maneuver. In the case of CHP, they don't seem to have a room for maneuver at the moment. Only AKP could create that room for maneuver. So when you look at, I mean, this is because of the numbers. Somebody said here that if it isn't 47%, if it isn't about 340 MPs in the parliament, there may be some room for activity that may come outside the AKP. But with these numbers, the only opening to heal this polarization in Turkey healing for this polarization in Turkey could come from AKP. So when I look at the situation in Turkey now, it is the Prime Minister himself who is going to determine the tone of the discussions in Turkey. That's how I see it. He has a choice now. Either he's going to take a more hardliner approach, or he's going to take a more moderate approach, trying to heal the wounds. And the best way is to heal the wounds in Turkey, you know, if you want policy certainty in Turkey as quickly as possible. Because it is not possible to change it's not possible to influence directly the court process. I mean, it has a timeline of its own. That's a different dimension. It's continuing. What can change? The environment, the mood that the court case is being carried out could be changed. And in regarding that mood change, the Prime Minister himself should be the guy who's going to take the take the lead in changing the mood in the country. The numbers show us that there is no other possibility. That's how I see it.
Let's hope that the Prime Minister will get the message that you're giving from Washington. And with Barant and Jair's comments, we're done for the day.
Okay, I really don't want to add anything Guven has said, and I know your time is
no, please
running
go.
Short. No, it's, again, to Abdullahi's comments, it's very difficult to discuss these things first, say that these good things have happened, now this is happening type of thing. I mean, we all appreciate the changes that have taken place in the last 5-6 years in Turkey. And we are not obvious in the situation that we were in year 2000 or 2001, and that should not be really a comparison after all the gains that have been made. What concerns us now is, at least from my point of view, the reversal of this trend is very concerning. And it could reverse because of the domestic and external circumstances. And second, the growth in the last 5 years was partly because of the support of the international sort of liquidity situation, which will not come back type of thing. But the end result was that Turkey behaved almost like a petroleum exporting country. And almost a similar Dutch disease has taken place in Turkey. With these kind of exchange rate policies and other policies, as long as you have all this money coming, almost limitless money is coming, that is bound to distort your priorities, sectoral priorities, industrial priorities, and all that. So when we talk about the change in this transformation process, we really have to go back to some of these basic economic rules. I sometimes am a little unhappy that some leading organizations and individuals talk about the incentives to be given to certain sectors or to certain regions. Now, I don't think that is the right process. I don't want to open up a whole new discussion. But to correct and maintain the fundamentals that will help the transformation process, and then you do other things, of course, on top of it, but without which any other measure is bound to be less than wholly successful. That's all. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Güven Sak and Barant Tuncer, and thank you all for coming.